You are tuning in to the Atlanta Realtors Rundown, the official podcast for the Atlanta Realtors. We're here to keep you updated with the latest trends, topics, and keep you in the know of our ever-changing Atlanta market. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Atlanta Realtors Rundown, your premier place for all things real estate. I'm Neil Midder, your host. I'm here to bring you all the latest trends, information, success stories in real estate and beyond. If you're not already a subscriber, please make sure you subscribe to get the latest episodes directly to your favorite platform. We also are very keen to hear your thoughts and feedback, so please leave a comment after this episode and also let us know if there's any other topics you'd like us to talk about. I'm very excited today to have the Hall of Famer, Shay Zimmerman, with us here. Shay has too many accolades for me to be able to remember all of them by heart, so I've had to write some of them down. Forgive me for not including all of them, Shay,
but
there was a lot. So Shay has been the GRI governor. She initiated the Realtors for Isaacson. In terms of awards from ARA, she's had the five-star Circle of Excellence, not once, but twice. Captain of Industry, Realtor of the Year, EA Isaacson Award, and the Sally Washburn Lifetime Award. Shay's a ARA past president. She graduated from the Leadership Development Academy, which is now known as Emerging Leaders for ARA, has been an NAR director, an RPAC major investor. As I said, that's just a small snippet. So basically, I'd like to start off, Shay. I'm just welcome you to the podcast.
Well, thank you.
I'd like to understand a bit how you got into real estate. What brought you to real estate?
Well, I knew you were going to ask me that question today, and I will share with you that it was not my first choice in career, but when we moved to Atlanta in 1975, had not such a great experience trying to find a place to live. Of course, coming here from another state, trying to figure out my way, went through about four different real estate agents. Some were good and some were not. So that experience kind of taught me, maybe gave me thoughts about how you should do this business and maybe the most important part. So when I found myself after a couple more careers looking around for what to do, my husband said, why don't you get in real estate? You know, you have always talked about it. Why don't you do it? And I said, well, I wouldn't do it the way our experience was. So I'd like to make a difference in it if I did it. And so I went to school and got my license.
Perfect. So tell me a bit about that. So you said you'd been through a few realtors, hadn't really been the way that you'd expected to. What kind of things did you experience? And what kind of things did you
change? Lack of follow-up.
Okay.
Lack of really listening to the needs and understanding what it takes to move a family to another state. And then when I want to say just not listening to me and not really hearing me and not being responsive, like returning calls and setting up appointments, things like that. So I actually found the house myself.
Okay.
And it happened to be with a listing agent who was great.
Okay, very interesting. Yeah. And so then you got into the GRI, is that how you?
No, I went to, once I had my license and I joined ARA, I listened to the Code of Ethics class and the orientation where the instructor, who was Buddy Weston at the time, did a phenomenal job and talked about, you know, how we need to promote our own interest and private property rights and be respectful of people and responsive. And it kind of just endeared me to ARA. So that's when I started to initially got involved, but really wasn't until another person who's pretty familiar with this audience, I would think, Tom Sperlin, said, when are you going to get involved? Come on, come be on the PR committee with me. So I did that. And that was really the foothold that got me here in ARA. That was back in the mid-90s.
So now I found something else I have in common with you, because my first committee was also
PR
and communications.
But it was a time that we didn't have the technology, so Tom and I would take a day and go visit brokerages who were not part of ARA and ask what we needed to do to get them involved.
Okay. And so how many different brokerages did you visit around that time?
Oh, my gosh. I can't count. I mean, we would do 5 and 10 a day.
Okay.
And they were little bitty one-man shops in parts of the city that were not necessarily included into ARA at that time. So we went south of I-20.
Okay.
The southern part of the city, and it's kind of out in the outskirts and kept respectful of the other boundaries that the other boards had. But we just went to what was in our territory and that were members. They were not members. So invited them in.
So you've been part of lots of different committees at ARA. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite? Are we allowed to ask that question?
Yeah, I don't know if you're allowed to ask that question.
Well, I've kind of asked
but I'll
it.
Answer it. I'll answer it the best I can. You know, probably the governmental affairs and RPAC, and that is really where my passion kind of settled in, because that is probably one of the single most important things that we do as members of any of this association is really advocate for private property rights and the fact that, you know, our members can have their own business, be independent contractors, but we have to be mindful of what Washington wants to do and what the state legislature wants to do to affect those things. So we're kind of like the watchdog.
Right. So yeah. What are some of the things that you've helped us bring in, you know, with the private property rights? And
I think it was Amendment 1 when the state of Georgia actually, there was a bill in the House, in the state House, that was wanting to make all water in Georgia public land and that the state of Georgia would have control. We were in a drought at that time, and I can't even remember what year that was, probably around 2000. And that kind of lit a fire in my belly because I live on a small lake that we own, and you know, they wanted, certainly they can have Lake Lanier, and they can have the Chattahoochee River, but what makes the pond in a farmer's backyard or the one in my backyard belong to the state of Georgia.
Right.
So advocating for that, we worked hard. One of my neighbors was a state senator, reminded him that what that law was going to do was going to affect our ability to use the water in that lake the way we wanted to. Mm-hmm. So he kind of helped move that along. So we were very vocal.
Okay. So I also saw that you did stuff with, you know, trying to, for real, to, you know, for the Isaacson. Is that kind of what prompted you to try and do some of that?
No, I happened to have the privilege of working for Senator Isaacson as an agent early in my career. In fact, he asked me to manage one of his offices and asked me also to step into the NAR director role when he went into Congress. And I worked on that campaign with him. And then one day he called and said, there's a seat in the Senate and I'm going to run for Senate. And a couple of other friends at GAR, we said, you know, he's in one of the safest seats in the Congress mm-hmm. in the 6th District of Georgia.
Right.
How, you know, now he wants to run for Senate. We better get busy because we need to get his name out throughout the state. So through my involvement at GAR, going through GRI, I met a lot of great realtors throughout the state. Mm-hmm. So I picked up the phone and started a campaign and called a realtor in every county in Georgia. It's 152 counties in Georgia. I found one in every county.
All right.
And I called all the major principals of firms in and around Atlanta and throughout the state. And then with the help of some of our state lobbyists, went to Washington and talked to the lobbyists at NAR and the people involved at that level. And we were able to put together a steering committee for Johnny to run for Senate and also the first independent expenditure campaign. So they put me in charge of that. I think I was the chairman of the steering committee or Realtor for Isaacs. It was a great experience.
Right.
And we got him elected.
And how did that feel? I mean, after all of that work, trying to...
It's pretty cool because he was the first realtor in the U.S. Senate.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he...
From Georgia?
From Georgia.
Wow.
And he's a good businessman, a man that I always thought was great at compromise, which I thought he would make a good senator. But it also helped us do some things in the U.S. Senate and with Congress to help people buy and sell homes. I mean, and he actually sponsored the tax credit in 2013, first-time home buyer tax credit, and got that passed. And that was a lot of conversations that he had in the back room with different senators to get that passed. But we did it and kind of pulled us out of the recession that we were in. So you couldn't have done that if we didn't have a realtor in the Senate. So it was good. Good. Good man.
So I know that you're, you know, a fierce advocate for RPAC too. Mm-hmm. Is that, again... Is that due to the property rights, you know?
Yes, it is. But, you know, early on, I don't think most of us ever understand as realtors or anything else that RPAC, you know, it's money, but it's almost, and I think of it somewhat like title insurance. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that insurance that you have for something unexpected. And our PAC dollars help us get a seat at the table so that we can get an elected official to have a conversation with us. And usually they are so driven by raising money that they need dollars. So it kind of gets you there.
Right.
And then you can help them understand because they don't do what we do. They don't see what we see. And our PAC dollars help us get there and have that conversation. And when those dollars go, we call them purple. They're not red or blue. They're
right.
Purple.
Yep.
And they're pretty much split right down the middle along party lines. And it's not favoritism. Doesn't matter which party the money goes to. It's really about having them listen to your issues that you think are important. Whatever it happens to be for the health of a community,
mm-hmm.
To be able to get a mortgage.
Right.
The Dodd-Frank Act was something that we worked on with Congress as well. And our PAC dollars make those things happen. So that's kind of why.
Right.
It's just a donation every year that you make, a contribution, not right. a donation. It's but not, you can't write it off on your taxes, though. So.
Right. But as you said, I mean, it helps us be able to continue to operate as realtors and mm-hmm. makes a big difference in terms of home ownership for
well, sure. All so, you know, that the mortgage interest deduction, you know, every new administration tries to take that off the table. We fight hard to get it back on there.
Right.
We can know that. People who own homes build better communities than those that rent.
Yes.
They're more invested.
Mm-hmm.
So we want that. You know, we want to continue with home ownership. And, you know, some of the things that are happening today are probably going to affect that long term. So we mm-hmm. just need to keep that fight going. So.
Right. Very good. So I know that you've been kind of switching gears a bit. You've been a mentor to a lot of people. But who would you say has been your biggest mentor?
Oh, of me? Mm-hmm. Mentor of
yeah.
me? So it's somewhere between Senator Isaacson, he taught me a lot, but Sally Washburn, who was one of the first women brokers in the state, was with the same firm when I first was new, and she taught me a lot. She was actually from the south side of Atlanta, lovely woman, strong-willed, and she did teach me a lot about how to conduct myself. And, you know, she had a little saying. She used to teach new agent training.
Mm-hmm.
And she would say, and this is a long time ago, and women probably don't do this anymore, but she said, you know, honey, when you walk out of your driveway or out of your house to go to the mailbox, that mailman might be your next customer. So you need to always dress professionally and conduct yourself in the manner of a realtor, and somebody would want to work with you. So,
right.
Yeah.
And I've heard you say that. You know,
I know you have.
Yeah, even now, you know.
Yeah. Well, sure it's still true because, you know, you don't know who your next customer is going to be.
Right.
And you can serve all people. Right.
So what about Senator Isaacson? What kind of advice did he give you along the way?
Well, as an agent working for him in the firm, I mean, he was one who nothing was too hard for him, or he would always make time to meet with his new associates. He would go with you on a listing appointment.
Okay.
He would help you with negotiating with builders and developers. That kind of watching him do that and experiencing it firsthand taught me how you work to compromise at a table when you're with somebody, which is something that we don't always do in our industry today. It's very competitive amongst ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we would get so much further if we would just work together.
Right.
You know, and not to let your personality get in the way of a contract or mm-hmm. what the buyer wants or what the seller wants. Yeah.
Right. I mean, as you say, they really do come first. We're just helping them
achieve their goals. Well, sometimes we let our personality get in the way.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And he did. But and the business is there. But you have to compromise. And that's what happens on a contract.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And you don't have to think about you're giving something in. It's just people coming together.
So I know you're part of the Forms Committee, too.
Yes.
Quite a while. How did that all start? How did you get introduced into that?
You know, a contract is only as good as the people that make it.
Mm-hmm.
And that form is kind of your guiding principle of so many different things. So an interest I've had for a number of years is actually knowing that contract inside out and backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, and I long to continue that path. I no longer serve officially on the Forms Committee,
oh, okay.
but I did chair it a few years back and have sat on that committee. But anyone can come in and listen and contribute to the conversation. So I do. I spent the morning there today
mm-hmm.
Listening to the conversations and the guidance that we get from the attorneys on why we should do things a certain way and protections, and try to make it better. There's so much that happens in the course of life and business that alter the way we do business. So the contracts need to always kind of be changing a little bit every year based on the behavior of the people that make them, so that we can tighten it up and make sure that it's as good as it can be.
So you mentioned anybody can come. So how, you know, where does the committee meet? How often does it meet?
It's a virtual meeting.
Okay.
It went virtual during COVID, and we've remained that way. So it's a statewide group of people. A lot of instructors are on those calls. They're not voting members, but they participate because they hear what they're being asked in the classroom, which is good. But you can email the Christina Chow or Lily McLean at GAR, and they will send you the dates, and you can ask to be a guest on the forms committee, and they will send you the link, and you can be the guest.
Okay.
Yeah. And then if you've got, and if you ever have something or recommendations for a change to the contracts, or you think something needs clarification, you can also send them that question or the legal helpline at GAR and make the request, and we'll get it on the agenda.
Okay.
That's how change happens.
Right, right. I understand it's quite involved. Is there a big lot of people involved on the forms committee?
There were probably 100 on the call this morning.
Wow, okay.
And a lot of people are there just to listen
and
to hear the conversations about what's coming, and, you know, because we kind of chew it up and dissect it pretty well and then come up with language, and then legal reviews it and comes back again. It takes a while, but that's what happens. So,
what would you say has been probably one of the biggest changes you've seen in terms of, you know, on the forms?
Most recently, I would say that earnest money being held by closing attorneys.
Okay.
Previous to that, we changed from a right to inspect to due diligence period, which kind of set a lot of people upside down for a while, and now they're using the right to request repairs again and not just the due diligence.
Right.
So it's just about the trends, you know, everybody trying to find their angle to make it right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you have a feel for the next trend, maybe?
I couldn't say because it's all confidential.
Okay. Don't want to get anyone into any trouble.
Right, right.
So in terms of advice you give to you know, new agents coming in or even existing agents, what's some of that advice that you give to them?
Well, first of all, it is extremely difficult to do this job part-time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a full-time job, and the clients that you serve expect you to be available when they need you. So that is usually the first thing that I tell everyone, and then they need to learn the contract, and they need to put their efforts into learning the aspects of this business. But the collaboration that agents have amongst themselves with each other, whether it be at a board activity or a company level or just in the field, is really where they learn the most. So isolating themselves into their home office or thinking they don't need other people is really, I don't think, is correct, in my opinion, because you really need that collaboration, that experience out there with other agents and with the public.
Right, and I agree. I know that, you know, during COVID, a lot of people ended up working from home.
Right.
And, you know, after you've been here a few years, you start to think you know a lot of stuff, but only when you come into the office and you start talking to other people, you kind of pick up lots of different things and different ideas that you really didn't hear about.
Well, and, you know, our market is so vast in Atlanta. And what happens, my office is located in Buckhead. What happens in Buckhead is not the same that happens in Milton or in West Cobb or on the west side or in the east side, you know, anywhere else in the city. They're just different nuances to each market. You're going to pick that up from the offices to do that.
Right.
You really are. You're right. You got to be in there and got to do it.
So what are some of the challenges that you're seeing in the market at the moment?
Besides inventory?
Yes.
You know, I'm of the opinion lately that the biggest challenge with inventory is that agents have been so focused on finding houses for the buyer, they forgot to talk to the people who want to sell their houses.
Okay.
And I think that if you were to really talk to the homeowners that you know today on a regular basis, you would find a big increase in inventory. Inventory is growing, which is great. You know, we have challenges with interest rates, but that's really not a challenge. I got in the business, I sell them at 14 and 15%. So you can sell them at 7.
Right. Yep.
Okay. But our conversations have to change with people. The consumer needs to be a conversation. If interest rates are a problem, let's find out what you can afford to buy,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
And let's go look at those houses. You know, that might be your first step.
Right.
When the interest rates go down, you refinance, right?
Yep.
And take the focus off of that. It's really about home ownership. It's not about interest rates.
Right. I'm hearing that the builders are bringing a lot more new home inventory too.
There are a great deal. You know, during the first-time home buyer tax credit in 2013, took most of the new home inventory off the market because all the standing inventory was sold at that time,
mm-hmm.
which left a big void, right? Because during the time of the financial collapse, nobody was building lots, developing lots, and it takes 5 to 7 years to get that end product to market from the time you find the farmland that's going to be developed, the time you get the houses. So we're behind.
Right.
You know, in developing that new inventory. We're getting there. Mm-hmm. I think the last report that I read, new home permits were up. You're seeing some redevelopment in certain areas of our city, and that's going to bring new inventory up. We haven't sold new homes in a very long time, so agents are going to have to learn how to sell new construction again,
right.
and the nuances to that. And there are new players in the market today. Some of the firms that built houses back in 2008 and 10 are somebody else today. So you have to re-identify who they are. And you're seeing more high-rises going up in town.
So are there any popular areas in Atlanta that you like? I mean, there's been so many areas that have been coming up, new developments.
For me, I live in Roswell. So Obviously my love is going to be Roswell. It's a bedroom community of our great city. So there's not a lot of industry up there. That's still my preference. I think there's some neat things going on. You know, when I look at the container neighborhoods, I'm thinking like, okay, somebody's going to live in a shipping container, but mm-hmm. okay.
Yep.
It's kind of a cool idea, kind of a neat way of thinking about it. I like some of the things the city's doing. I think they're making plans for more affordable housing close to MARTA stations and things like that for where our city needs to be in the next 10 to 20 years. So
right.
A lot of great growth.
Okay. In terms of, you know, kind of just get to know you a bit more. So I like food. I know you do too. Is there a favorite restaurant that you have?
There's tons of favorite restaurants that I have. So my husband and I frequent one in Roswell called Table in Maine, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
They have a sister restaurant across the street from them. We kind of flip-flop in between then. But there's so many great restaurants in Atlanta. I wish I had the time to go and experience them all.
Oh, you just do one a week. I'm sure that would
I'm sure that will work, right? Absolutely.
And do you have any words or phrases that you kind of live your life by, or, you know, that?
Oh, you mean like do the right thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Even when nobody's looking?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
That's probably my favorite one. And I think that the integrity that I think for our industry, what we need to do is make sure that we hold our heads high and that we're authentic in what we're doing in this profession, and to do the right thing. Tell people the truth, you know?
Right. Yeah. Authentic every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, this year you're inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
How did that feel, you know, when you first heard about it? You know, tell us a bit about that.
Well, it is an incredible honor, and I'm extremely humbled by that. Don't feel like I necessarily deserve it, but I guess other people thought differently. And everything that I've done in my career, which spans 37 years, it's been just because I thought it was the right thing to do at the time. It's been a great experience for me to do all of that. So if this is the way GR wants to kind of acknowledge that, that's wonderful.
Well, I'm very glad that you got it. I know that you're being very humble, but it was definitely well earned.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Had good leadership.
Well, and you are too. Well, I'd like to thank you for coming in today.
Thank you, Neil.
I appreciate you spending some time with us and giving some insights into your experiences and things that we can focus on in the future.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to the Atlanta Realtors Rundown. Please subscribe. And for more information on how to get engaged, check us out at atlantarealtors.com. We look forward to having you join us for the next episode.